The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of the Field of Boleyns features violence and alcohol consumption. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Tommy Fitzpatrick trudged through a muddy bog in southern Ireland. The ancient swamp reeked of decay, but Tommy barely noticed. He was focused on one thing, the treasure at the end of this path. He stuck close behind his guide, George, an ornery little fellow. In fact, Tommy held onto George's neck for safety. But that didn't sit well with George.
"You've got a mighty strong grip for a layabout," he groused.
Tommy scowled. He was tired of George's insults. He had tried to ignore them all day. This time, though, he dunked George's head into the brackish water and held it there. After a moment, Tommy yanked George's head up.
"Are you done sassing me?"
he yelled. Instead of answering, George spit a mouthful of rancid bog water into Tommy's eyes. Tommy screamed. He tried to wipe it away, but he couldn't see. In the melee, George wriggled free of Tommy's grip. He took off as fast as he could across the bog. When Tommy's vision cleared, he sprinted after George. Lucky for him, his longer strides enabled him to catch up quickly. He tackled the little man, growling,
"Try that again and I'll kill you!"
George squirmed in defiance until Tommy lifted him out of the water. George's legs flailed in the air, but they couldn't make contact with his assailant. Finally, George stopped flailing and nodded obediently. Tommy placed him back on the ground. Without further ado, they returned to walking. There was still a long way to go before they reached their destination, George's secret stash of gold. Tommy was too distracted by the thought of those stacks of coins to see the glimmer of malice in George's eyes. Little did he know, he was walking right into a trap. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we're taking a walk through the Field of Boleyns, an Irish folktale about a young farmer who finds a leprechaun. Coming up, Tommy Fitzpatrick dreams of escaping life on the farm. Legends about leprechauns have circulated for over 1,000 years, beginning around the 8th century. In these original tales, leprechauns were little people who lived in the sea. But over the centuries, they evolved from sea sprites to terrestrial creatures. And along the way, Irish storytellers gave them a profession. The little bearded men became shoe cobblers. That's how they earned their vast sums of gold. In the early days of leprechauns, the creatures existed only by word of mouth. Their tales were told at bedtimes, in pubs, and at holiday gatherings. One of the first written mentions of leprechauns wasn't until the 14th century, when they appeared in a story about the King of Ulster. But it would take another 400 years for leprechauns to get a starring role. That came in the early 1800s. A young Irishman named Thomas Crofton Croker decided to compile the folktales that he had heard growing up. In 1825, he published Fairy Legends and Traditions of the South of Ireland, and at the heart of the collection was a leprechaun tale, The Field of Boleyns. The story featured a young Irishman and a leprechaun on a quest to find a pot of gold. But Croker's saga didn't portray any ordinary leprechaun. It featured a special type, a cluricaun. These mythical creatures were distinctly different from the affable green-suited leprechauns that most audiences know today. In contrast, cluricauns generally wore bright red suits and hats, but their differences went far beyond sartorial choices. These little men were trickier and more malicious. They were known to haunt people's homes and cause mischief in villages. Some stories claimed they were violent. Tommy Fitzpatrick woke to pounding on his bedroom door. His head throbbed at the sound. He was groggy and hungover from the night before.
"Wake up, you no-good drunk!"
he heard outside.
"The pigs aren't gonna feed themselves!"
That was Tommy's father, Big Tom. Even though Tommy was 29 years old, he still lived at home. Tommy yanked the covers over his head. He curled himself into a protective ball. He wanted to hide from the world. Today was the day he was supposed to get married, but his fiancée, Shannon McKenna, called it off a month ago. She was tired of Tommy's empty promises about buying their own place and settling down. Worst of all, she had already replaced him with Leah Murphy, who owned a farm down the road. Tommy wanted a place of his own too, but there was always something holding him back. Big Tom never paid him enough. There weren't any decent plots of land in the county, and even if Tommy could have afforded a farm, he really didn't want to do the work anyway. He'd rather lounge around and drink. So this morning, the last thing he wanted to hear was his father banging on the door.
"It's almost noon, for God's sake!"
Big Tom yelled again.
"Time to get your royal laziness out of bed."
After a minute, Tommy dressed and headed out to the kitchen.
"Look who finally crawled out of the bottle,"
his father jibed.
"Do you think you could do some work today, Your Highness? Or is your schedule too busy with drinking and sulking?"
Tommy scowled at his father. "Today's a holiday," he pointed out. "Nobody is working."
"I've been up since dawn,"
Big Tom shot back.
"And I saw Leah Murphy harvesting turnips earlier. Now that young man has a work ethic."
The mention of Leah Murphy almost made Tommy vomit.
"Don't you dare say that man's name," Tommy cried. "He's not good enough for Shannon. Someday I'll make my fortune, buy a place of my own, and then you won't have anyone to push around."
Big Tom shook his head.
"Fortune," he scoffed. "Everyone dreams of fortune, but nobody wants to put in the work. If you ever get rich, you can hire someone to do your work. Until then, you need to let the cows out to pasture, muck out the barn, spread out some new hay."
Tommy tuned out his father. He exited the kitchen and strolled out the front door. At first, he considered heading into town. It was a holiday. There would be plenty of drinking and dancing. But he saw Big Tom watching from the kitchen window. So Tommy waved contemptuously and headed across the yard to the barn. As Tommy trudged, he looked at the vista in front of him. As far as the eye could see, there were rolling green hills. The sun made them glisten like a blanket of emeralds. But the beauty was lost on Tommy. To him, it didn't represent paradise. It was a prison. The fields weren't picturesque. They were acres for him to plow and harvest. Tommy kicked open the barn door. He let the cows wander out into the field. He was supposed to clean the stalls, but he was already tired of work. His hangover was beginning to kick in. He desperately wanted a nap. Maybe if he could close his eyes for an hour, he'd get some energy to finish working. Tommy peeked back toward the house. His father was nowhere in sight. This was his chance. He slipped out the rear of the barn, down the hill, and to the nearby river. He followed the stream. He knew there was an abandoned mill a short distance away where he could sleep undisturbed. Halfway to the mill, Tommy heard a series of whistles from the other side of the hedgerow. It sounded like the call of a small bird. At first, he thought it might be a stonechat, but they didn't usually hang around this late in the summer. There it was again, a little louder and clearer. It wasn't a bird at all. This time it sounded like a person whistling a tune. Tommy smirked. He realized it was coming from the edge of Liam Murphy's property. "That no-good homewrecker," Tommy muttered to himself. He picked up a rock and tiptoed closer to the hedge.
"Let's see how much Shannon loves him when he's missing some teeth,"
Tommy growled. He climbed the hedge and cocked his arm, ready to throw the rock. But as Tommy's eyes cleared the hedge, he didn't see Liam Murphy at all. Instead, he saw a diminutive man, no bigger than 3 feet tall, propped under a willow tree. The man was dressed head to toe in a formal red suit. He had a matching top hat and a heavy leather apron. And he was drinking from a stoneware jug. A leprechaun, Tommy thought. But when the tiny man caught sight of Tommy, he didn't run, like the legend said. He shrugged and took another swig of his drink. He looked directly at Tommy with a menacing gaze. He flashed a mouthful of crooked yellow fangs. This wasn't any ordinary leprechaun, Tommy realized, gulping back a yelp. It was a cluricon. Tommy knew about cluricons. They were a dangerous kind of fairy, one that was cunning, mercurial, and even violent. Coming up, Tommy battles a mythical creature with a treasure of gold. Hi, listeners. It's Vanessa from Parcast. When you think of a criminal, do you picture a killer, a gangster, a thief? I bet you didn't think it could be the little old lady down the street who murdered her tenants. Every Wednesday on my series, Female Criminals, meet the unlikeliest of felons. Mothers, neighbors, and unsuspecting lovers with a penchant for dangerous behavior. Discover the psychology and motives behind their disturbing crimes and find out where their story stands today. But that's not all. Airing right now on Female Criminals is our special 5-part look at the world's most infamous femme fatales, women who were deceptive and deadly, but not always the villain. Catch these episodes and more by following the Spotify original from Parcast, Female Criminals. New episodes premiere weekly. Listen free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the story. Tommy was in shock. He was standing just a few feet from a cluricon. He had heard tales of this special type of leprechaun, terrifying tales. For a moment, Tommy wondered if he was imagining it. Perhaps he was hallucinating. How much did he drink last night? He pinched himself, almost tumbling from the hedge in the process. But the mythical creature was still there. In fact, the little man winked and said, "Why, Tommy Fitzpatrick, didn't your father teach you it's impolite to stare?" A chill ran down Tommy's spine. "How do you know my name?" he stuttered.
"I know all kinds of things," the little man replied, "including the fact that you're sneaking away from the farm again, which is probably why that pretty fiancée of yours left you."
Tommy gasped. He knew that cluricons were hateful fairies, but he didn't realize the creature might be more malicious than his father. It made Tommy's head ache even more. All he really wanted to do was take a nap. He considered continuing on his way to the mill to sleep for a while. Before he jumped back down the hedge, though, something caught Tommy's eye. The shiny buttons on the little man's red jacket, they twinkled in the midday sun. A singular thought entered Tommy's head. Gold. Tommy's mind suddenly raced. Cluricons have gold. If I can get his treasure, I'll have enough money to buy a house, a farm, a whole ranch. I'll win Shannon back. I'll put Liam Murphy's farm to shame. I'll even shut Big Tom up for good. This leprechaun is the answer to all my prayers. Unfortunately, however, this brilliant idea hinged on one important factor: catching the little man in red. Tommy had heard all the rules. He couldn't take his eyes off him. Cluricons disappear the moment you look away, and they were eerily clever at tricking people into averting their gaze. So Tommy clambered over the hedgerow with his eyes glued on the little man. As Tommy dropped to the ground, he smiled at the cluricon.
"I seem to be at a loss," he said, trying to sound calm. "You know my name, but I don't know yours." The cluricon took another long sip from his jug. "Call me George," he said.
"Nice to meet you, George," Tommy replied.
George grinned knowingly at Tommy.
"I don't want to alarm you," he said, but your cows have gotten out. They're ruining your crops.
Tommy suddenly remembered the farm. He hadn't put the cows into the proper pasture. Big Tom was going to be livid. He was probably yelling for him right now. Tommy glanced over his shoulder to the farm when he realized,
"You're trying to trick me,"
Tommy yelled. George shrugged.
"I'm just a concerned citizen trying to save you from a disaster."
Tommy scowled. This Cluricon was even craftier than he thought. He needed to get close to him before he could snatch him, so he decided to make idle conversation. He eyed George's stoneware flask.
"That's a mighty big jug you got there," he said. "What do you have in it?"
George's eyes lit up.
"Ale," he replied. "The best ale in all of Ireland."
Tommy had spent a significant part of his 29 years drinking ale. He was well-versed in the intricacies of brewing. He asked the little man what was in it.
"Heath,"
the Cluricon said simply. Tommy howled with laughter. He had heard of making ale from wheat, corn, even honey, but never from heath, which was just ordinary grassland. George looked offended at Tommy's guffaws.
"It's a secret family recipe," he snarled. "We learned it from the people of Denmark many years ago."
Tommy shook his head in disbelief. "Good Irish ale from Denmark?" George shrugged.
"Well, if you don't believe me, have a wee draft yourself."
As Tommy edged closer to the Cluricon, he caught a whiff of the sweet smell of alcohol. His mouth watered. His head was still pounding from his hangover. He knew one sip would put him at ease.
"In all my days," Tommy remarked, "I've never heard of someone making ale from heath. Maybe I will try a little. Just a nip, though."
George grinned.
"Of course, young man. Lean on down here. Have as much as you want."
Tommy dropped down to his knees. He was now at eye level with the fairy. He wrapped his hands around the stoneware jug and lifted it to his lips. It smelled like a field of clover in summer, with subtle hints of pine and chicory. It warmed Tommy's soul. He was about to close his eyes and take a nice long drink when he noticed George tiptoeing toward the hedge.
"Hey!"
Tommy yelled. He dropped the jug and it shattered on the ground. The ale splashed everywhere, soaking his legs, but he dove forward and just caught George by his red jacket.
"Thought you could trick me," Tommy cried. "Well, you've met your match, little man."
George held up his arms in surrender.
"You got me," he muttered. "Fair and square. So now what?"
Tommy grinned.
"You know what I want. Your gold."
He switched his grip from the Cluricon's jacket to his neck. George winced.
"Aye," he replied. "I'll lead you to it, as long as you don't snap my spine."
Tommy breathed a sigh of relief. Now all he had to do was follow the Cluricon to the gold, and he would be a rich man. His whole life was about to change.
"Let's get moving," Tommy crowed.
George nodded. He straightened the wrinkles in his suit and pointed upstream.
"It's quite a trek. I hope a layabout like you won't mind a spot of walking."
Tommy wiped the sweat from his brow.
"Don't you worry about me," he spat. "Let's get a move on."
The mismatched pair headed off along the riverbank. They crossed several farm paddocks. At each new farm, they had to climb over hedgerows and old stone walls. At first, Tommy was invigorated by the trek. They were on the way to get his gold. But soon, he grew tired. Sweat poured from his brow. Wet spots formed on his shirt. Before long, Tommy was gasping for air. Between his hangover and the noonday sun, he was ready to collapse. George watched him with a twinkle in his little eyes. Then he announced that he had the perfect shortcut for them and led Tommy straight into a bog. In the thick muck of the bog, each step was a struggle. Their feet sunk into the ground, and they had to yank them out with an audible pop. It was slow and agonizing, and Tommy was getting more frustrated by the minute. That's when he lost it on George and dunked the Cluricon's head in the water. George spit the brackish slop into Tommy's eye and took off running. When Tommy caught up with him, he swore to kill him, gold or not, if it happened again. And George, apparently chastised, suggested that they take a break. He had stashed another jug of ale on the other side of the bog. They could sit and drink that. After more slogging, Tommy and George finally made it. They settled down against a low stone wall. George removed one of the rocks and unveiled a tankard of ale. Tommy and George passed the container back and forth. Tommy began to breathe a little easier. More than ever, he wanted to close his eyes and nap. George eyed him warily.
"Why don't you just sleep a little bit?" he suggested.
Tommy yawned.
"A little rest would feel nice," he said. "A nap would do you well," George continued. "You're probably still smarting over not getting married today."
But that backfired on George. Tommy snapped. He threw the tankard against the wall and grabbed the Cluricon.
"I take it from a lot of people," he said. "My father, Shannon, townspeople, but I'm not going to take it from you."
George shook. His eyes popped wide. He was suddenly out of zingers. But Tommy didn't let up. He squeezed the leprechaun's neck tighter. George couldn't breathe. He managed to gurgle,
"You'll never get the gold if you kill me."
Tommy released George. The fairy gasped and fell to the ground in a heap. Tommy looked him in the eye.
"The next time you sass me," he said, "I will kill you."
George dusted himself off. He was still shaken, and his eyes glittered angrily. But he changed the subject.
"We still have a long way to go. We should get moving."
After another long hike, Tommy started to falter again.
"How much further?" he pleaded.
George nodded to the hill in front of them.
"It's just over that hill."
Tommy's heart leapt. He could almost feel the gold in his hands. When they crested the hill, Tommy expected to find a field strewn with gold coins and stacks of heavy bars. But Tommy couldn't believe his eyes. Stretched out in front of him wasn't a treasure, but acres and acres of weeds. The ground was covered in knee-high boleans, a local ragweed with tiny yellow flowers. Tommy's heart sank. It had to be the least picturesque plot of land in all the Emerald Isle. George smirked.
"Well, Tommy, I present you with your gold."
Tommy glared at the fairy. He had warned him about treachery. Now he was going to kill him. Coming up, Tommy's greed jeopardizes his treasure. Now back to the story. Tommy Fitzpatrick looked out over 40 acres of Irish countryside. There wasn't a pot of gold in sight. Instead, as far as the eye could see, there were boleans. The knee-high ragweed seemed to sprout everywhere. Tommy's voice shook with rage.
"Is this some sort of joke?"
Before George could respond, Tommy snatched him off the ground with one hand. He hoisted him high into the air. Tommy shouted,
"I bested you fair and square. I want the gold, not a field of boleans."
Tommy punched George in the eye. He wrung his neck. Then he slammed him to the ground and began beating him. George tried to shield himself with his hands.
"Stop!" he cried. "I didn't lie to you. The gold is here. It's here. Just don't hit me again."
Tommy lowered his fist.
"How do I know you're telling the truth?" he asked.
George's cheek was red and bleeding. One of his eyes was starting to swell.
"I can show you," he whimpered. "I know she ain't much to look at, but if a rainbow led the way, then everybody would find it now, wouldn't they?"
George gestured to the acres of yellow blossoms.
"A field of gold to hide me gold," he chuckled.
Tommy didn't laugh.
The Clericon touched his cheek gingerly.
Well, that's gonna leave a scar, he muttered.
I'm sorry, Tommy said, suddenly rueful. I shouldn't have hit you like that. I'm just desperate. This is my only chance.
George shook his head in exasperation.
A chance to steal someone else's hard-earned gold, he quipped. Instead of earning it yourself, but that's beside the point. A deal's a deal.
Tommy nodded. George led them into the middle of the Bolians. They wove through hundreds of the rough little weeds. Finally, George arrived at one unspectacular specimen.
This is it, he announced.
Tommy shook his head in disbelief. The gold is buried here? He asked. George nodded soberly at him. Tears welled in Tommy's eyes. A grin spread across his face. He danced around the Bolians. He'd never been so happy in all his life. George cleared his throat.
Well, Tommy, he said, I fulfilled my promise. I brought you to my gold. Now I'll leave you to it.
Tommy waved him away absentmindedly. He was too busy imagining what he was going to do with all the coins. He started digging with his hands. It was rough, dry earth. With each handful, he only scraped a little away. Under a few layers, he still didn't see any gold. Tommy turned to George, who was strolling away.
How far down is it? He asked.
George told him that it was buried almost 5 feet down. He didn't want the gold accidentally washing away after a heavy rain.
It's too bad you don't have a shovel, George added.
Tommy cursed to himself. He didn't think to bring a shovel. He looked around for any kind of tool, a flat rock or a sturdy log, but there was nothing but Bolians. He clawed at the earth a bit more, but an unpleasant thought was dawning. He would have to return home and fetch a shovel. But Tommy looked around the field. Every Bolian looked exactly alike. If he left, he would never find his way back to this one. He'd have to search for days and weeks, and he might never find it again. He collapsed onto the ground, scowling his customary scowl. But sitting there, staring at his feet, Tommy was struck with inspiration. He untied his boot and yanked off his red stocking. He tied the sock around the Bolian. He grinned at it. Now, when he returned, he would be able to find it immediately. As he turned to leave, he noticed George lurking amongst the weeds, smirking at him.
You're just going to untie it when I leave, Tommy yelled.
George removed his hat and held it over his heart.
By my honor as an Irishman, he said, I vow not to touch your red stocking.
Tommy sighed in relief. He had finally beaten the Clericon into submission.
Godspeed, George, he said. May good luck find you wherever you go.
George smiled back.
Goodbye to you, Tommy. I wish you much luck with all the gold you find.
For the first time since coming across George, Tommy took his eyes off him without worrying he'd disappear. It was a relief. He was tired of that bright red suit. But as he glanced up at the sky, his relief turned to agitation. The sun was getting low on the horizon. If he wanted to dig up the gold before nightfall, he'd have to hurry. Tommy started running across the field of Bolians. He climbed the hill and then back down into the bog. He trudged through the noxious mud. On the other side, he traced the river back along farm paddocks and meadows. The whole way, his legs ached, his lungs burned. Tommy hustled faster than he had ever moved in his whole life. After a while, Tommy finally saw his father's barn come into view. He was almost home. He cut across one of their pastures, dodging cows and cow patties. At the barn, he threw open the door and raced inside. Immediately, Tommy ran to their bulkhead of tools. He threw aside rakes, pitchforks, and axes until he located a sturdy shovel.
There it is, he yelled to himself.
At the same moment, he heard a voice behind him.
There it is indeed,
It was Big Tom.
"There's the laziest, most worthless farmer in all of Ireland," Tom spat. "Just where in the blazes have you been all day?"
Tommy paused. He knew Big Tom was going to lay into him even worse than before, but Big Tom looked at his son. Tommy was covered in dirt and mud. He was sweating. His eyes were clear and sober. Big Tom realized that maybe his son had been working after all. A genuine smile spread across his face.
I underestimated you," Big Tom stammered. "Get back to whatever you're working on. You'll show that Liam Murphy who's boss after all."
Tommy was stunned by his father's reaction. He had never seen Big Tom so appreciative before. But Tommy didn't have time to process what had happened. He had to get back to the field of Boleyns. It was getting dark. Tommy sprinted across the field, down to the river, through the farm paddocks and meadows. He struggled again through the bog. This time, his legs felt heavier than before. With each step in the mud, he felt like he might be stuck forever. But he made it through. And finally, Tommy arrived at the hill. He was so tired, he used the shovel as a crutch to limp to the top. But he was excited. He was almost back to the field of Boleyns. He congratulated himself for the ingenious idea of marking the weed with a red sock. Now it would be easy work to dig up the gold. But when Tommy crested the hill and looked into the valley, he collapsed. Tommy wailed at the top of his lungs. His red stocking was still there, just as George had promised, but now there were identical red stockings on every Boleyn. There must have been a million red stockings flapping in the wind. It would be impossible for him to find the correct one. George had duped Tommy once and for all.
"Damn you, George,"
Tommy muttered under his breath. But then his defiance gave out. He hung his head in shame. His dreams of gold and riches were dashed. He couldn't buy a farm and rub it in Liam Murphy's face. He couldn't win back his fiancée, Shannon, and Big Tom would never let him live it down. He would nag more than ever. Tommy, dejected, grabbed his shovel and headed for home. This time, though, Tommy wasn't in a rush. He strolled through the bog and farm pastures. He watched the sunset over the green hills. He actually took time to enjoy the landscape. When he arrived home, Tommy was surprised to find that his father had prepared dinner. He even poured Tommy a beer.
"To a hard day's work," Big Tom said.
Tommy didn't have the heart to tell his father what had happened with the Cluricon. "To a hard day's work," he echoed. But as the words crossed Tommy's lips, he started to smile. Though the day had been a bust, and he didn't have a pot of gold, he had worked hard all day, and for the first time in years, he felt tired and happy. Tonight, he would sleep soundly, and he would wake up the next day ready to start all over again. In the 1800s, the field of Boleyns thrust leprechauns into the spotlight. It helped launch the little bearded men into the realm of pop culture phenomena. Over the next 200 years, they headlined more stories, major motion pictures, even became the face of a breakfast cereal. But as leprechauns made the transition to big-time pop culture, much of their original symbolism was lost. Because in Ireland, tales like the Field of Boleyns weren't just playful adventure stories. They also spoke to a long, dark chapter in the national history. In 1649, Ireland was invaded by the British. In the century that followed, the country was essentially ransacked. Irish farms were confiscated and became the property of British landowners. And then things got even worse. In 1845, famine struck Ireland,
killing almost 1 million people. For Irish farmers like Tommy Fitzpatrick, it was a hopeless time. Many gave up or resorted to drinking. It seemed that only a miracle would let them escape their hard-scrabble lives, a miracle like a pot of gold. The Field of Bullions presented a counterpoint about that pot of gold. Leprechaun's gold was a fool's errand, it argued. Only hard work and determination would carry the Irish people through. Still, in the meantime, a cheeky leprechaun story can always provide a bit of laughter to lighten up the dark times. Thanks for listening to Tales. For more information on leprechauns, we found Dearmud O'Gillon's essay, The Leprechaun and Fairies, Dwarfs and the Household Familiar, a comparative study, to be extremely helpful to our research. We'll be back next Wednesday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Carrie Murphy, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Aaron Larson. This episode of Tales was written by Jesse Harris, with writing assistance by Nora Battelle, fact-checking by Adriana Romero, and research by Mickey Taylor. I'm Vanessa Richardson.